You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. There's an amazing piece of this whole healthcare drama. Really, the Republican-Democratic drama, the hard right versus the rest of America drama, the racists versus the rest of us drama that's being played out beneath the radar. And I want to lay it out for you, because I think it's just a crying shame that America is not talking about this. You will recall, well, actually, let me get to that in just a second. First of all, the amping up of racist rhetoric in the United States has been steadily going ever since President Obama was nominated by the Democratic Party to be their nominee for president. All the dog whistle stuff, all the coded language, it's been flying fast and furious. Some of it has been quite explicit. James Clyburn yesterday was talking African-American, the House Majority Whip, one of the most powerful and influential men in the House of Representatives, was talking about how he's receiving faxes that have things like nooses on them. You know, we had African-American members of Congress on Sunday walking in to vote, being called the N-word, and one was spat upon by these so-called conservatives, these so-called Republicans. Well, maybe they, I shouldn't say so-called Republicans, by the Tea Partiers. Here's what Clyburn had to say.
If you look at some of the faxes that I got today, racial slurs, nooses on gallows, and I'm telling you, some very vicious language. This stuff is not all that isolated. It's pretty widespread. Mm. I hope it's not too deep.
Yeah. And here's what I want to, this is the thing. Everybody has been focusing on the word Waterloo in Senator Jim DeMint's statement. Everybody's been focusing on the Waterloo. There was a whole, you know, entire segments yesterday in the news were devoted to the use of the word Waterloo. I was most fascinated by the use of his word breaking. His use of the word breaking in reference to President Obama. Listen to this clip. This is Senator Jim DeMint talking about how the Republican strategy was to stop President Obama's health care legislation from being successful. Here he is.
If we're able to stop Obama on this, it will be his Waterloo. It will break him, and we will show that we can, along with the American people, began to push those freedom solutions that work in every area of our society.
It will break him. Now, what the hell does that mean? This is a congressman from South Carolina, a state where for over 200 years there was an industry known as slave breaking. From the Columbian, Missouri newspaper, September 26, 1935. It's a story about a 115-year-old cabin being restored that had been lived in by a slave family, freed slaves. And Uncle Jim, who this elderly African-American who lived in this cabin, I'm quoting from the newspaper story. He says, according to Uncle Jim, Massa Dave, M-A-R-S-E, Dave, never had his slaves whipped like some folks did, and he never sent them to the slave breaker. Now, quoting from this 1935 newspaper, the slave breaker, the boogeyman of the Negro people, has retained a vivid spot in Uncle Jim's memory. And then they quote Uncle Jim, the former slave. He was a big, brawny man, and he was mean. He had a place here in town. I guess it's about where the Chink Sales garage is now. And whenever a slave became too unruly, his master took him to the slave breaker, who didn't often fail to beat the rebellion out of him. Slave breaker had a pen with a log fence about 10 or 12 feet high. He'd put the bad N-word in there and beat him several times a day. End of quote. We have, you know, Glenn Beck talking about Barack Obama having a deep-seated hatred of white people. and the white culture, in quotes. Bill O'Reilly saying the left sees white men as a problem. So Jim DeMint, how could a senator from South Carolina refer to breaking the first African-American president of the United States and mean anything other than dog whistle language to his constituents? What alerted me to this, frankly, was an email that I got from an African-American resident. I've gotten several, actually, from people who live in South Carolina saying, how come the national media is not talking about the fact that Jim DeMint used the word breaking, or it would break him in reference to Obama? Frederick Douglass was, when he was 16 years old, a slave. And his owner sent him to a professional slave breaker, a fellow by the name of Edward Covey. And he writes about this in his autobiography. This is from his autobiography, written in 1845. It's from a chapter called Cowardice Departed, Bold Defiance Took Its Place. Frederick Douglass. He said, if at any one time in my life more than another, I was made to drink the bitterest dregs of slavery, that time was during the first 6 months of my stay with Mr. Edward Covey. We were worked in all weathers. It was never too hot or too cold. It could never rain, blow, hail, or snow too hard for us to work in the field. Work, work, work was scarcely more the order of the day than of the night. The longest days were too short for him, and the shortest nights too long for him. I was somewhat unmanageable when I first went there, but a few months of his discipline tamed me. Mr. Covey succeeded in breaking me. I was broken in body, soul, and spirit. On one of the hottest days of the month of August 1933, Bill Smith, William Hughes, a slave named Eli, and myself, this is Frederick Douglass writing, were engaged in fanning wheat. The work was simple, requiring strength rather than intellect, yet to one entirely unused to such work as me, it came very hard. Keep in mind, he's 16 years old. About 3 o'clock of that day, I broke down. My strength failed me. I was seized with a violent aching of the head, attended with extreme dizziness. I trembled in every limb. Mr. Covey was at the house, about 100 yards from the treading yard where we were fanning the wheat. On hearing the fan stop, he left immediately and came to the spot where we were. He hastily inquired what the matter was. Bill answered that I was sick and there was no one to bring wheat to the fan. I had by this time crawled away under the side of the post and rail fence by the yard, hoping to find relief by getting out of the sun. He then asked where I was. He was told by one of the hands. He came to the spot and after looking at me for a while, asked what was the matter. I told him as well as I could, for I scarcely had the strength to speak. He then gave me a savage kick in the side and told me to get up. I tried to do so, but fell back in the attempt. He gave me another kick and again told me to rise. I tried again and succeeded in gaining my feet, but stopped to get the tub with which I was feeding the fan. I again staggered and fell. While down in this situation, Mr. Covey took up a hickory slat with which Hughes had been striking off the half-bushel measure, and he gave me a heavy blow upon the head, making a large wound, and the blood ran freely. And with this, he told me to get up again. That's slave breaking. Senator Jim DeMint. Play that clip real quickly if you've got it, Jacob.
Able to stop Obama on this, it will be his Waterloo. It will break him,
It will break him. What the hell is going on in this country? These caricatures of the President of the United States, this racist subtext, this use of race by the Republican Party, Pat Buchanan coming out and saying the Democrats shouldn't have passed civil rights in the 60s. What the hell is going on in this country?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, why are Republicans calling for a return to slave breaking? And your calls. Welcome back to your media support group for We the People of the civilized world. And is civilization breaking down? I would think that given the history of slave breaking in South Carolina, that if Jim DeMint did not mean that as a dog whistle phrase, when he said this will be his Waterloo, this will break him, if he did not mean that in the racial context or in the historic context of the state that he grew up in, and that I can't imagine he didn't know, that if he did not mean that, he would have issued an apology. And I have not yet heard an apology from Jim DeMint for using that phrase in reference to the first African-American president of the United States. So your thoughts on this, 866-987-THOM. And, of course, you know, today, the two hours ago, the president of the United States signed into law the Senate bill, this change. It's really changes around the edges. There's some very important changes, but this is not, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats both, I think, for their own particular partisan purposes, are exaggerating the significance and importance of this legislation. It's a good thing. It's a good first step. But this is not single-payer health care. This is not a public option. This is not going to put the health insurance companies out of business. In fact, in this morning's Financial Times, page 3, the headline, shares rise after health vote ends uncertainty. Andrew Jack in London, shares of many U.S. healthcare companies rose yesterday following the passage of healthcare reforms, with investors seeing the benefits of greater certainty and increased demand offsetting potential price controls. The industry likes it. They go on to point out how the pharmaceutical-like industry likes it even better. So, you know, yeah, it's a great thing. And as I've said before, I think the most important part of this whole thing is that President Obama now has a major legislative victory, or at least what is perceived as one. And well, frankly, it is one. And it increases the probability that Democrats will hold the House and Senate in 2010, and it increases the probability that he will be reelected in 2012. And that's a very important thing, because the President of the United States is the guy who nominates members of the United States Supreme Court. And on the U.S. Supreme Court, you've got Scalia, who's 74 years old, Kennedy, who's 73 years old, and a tip of the hat to Sue at our chat room for organizing this. Alito's 59. Breyer, well, see, of the conservatives, most of the conservatives are fairly young. Roberts is only 55 years old. He's a kid. Alito's 59 years old. Thomas is only 61 years old. But there are two, Scalia and Kennedy, 74 and 73 years old. If these guys retire, it's probably going to be in the second Obama term, as they're pushing up against 80. And it's because the Supreme Court is the most powerful of the three branches of government, it's really important that we have a Democrat in that office. Mike in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Man, what you just said in reference to his using Waterloo and the term break, I literally jumped out of my chair when I heard you say that, because ever since I heard that, I couldn't believe that, honestly, I wasn't familiar with the term Waterloo, with the reference, but the term break him, that stood out, and there is no means, or there's no way that is anybody, by any stretch of the imagination, was that a coincidence, a man from South Carolina using that term. If you read the book, which I highly recommend to anybody, or the letters, the Willie Lynch letters in 1712, the speech that he gave to all the slave masters, because they were having a problem with Negroes that were too restless, is the word term they used, the other N-word. But the term break him, taking the largest, the most restless, the most mean, the most whoever they deemed the most threat. They would take them and break them on an auction block in front of families, in front of their children, in front of the women. And that is to create, well, they send a message, and the term "break him" was very instrumental in that. And actually, if you read that, you'd see that he talks about how if you do this correctly, it will itself refuel itself and perpetuate, where eventually you won't have to do it anymore.
W.E.B. Du Bois writes about this slave breaking. Frederick Douglass writes about his experience being sent to a slave breaker. There's a long history. most people are familiar with breaking horses. The philosophy was similar. You know, break
their
spirit.
That's where it came from, yes.
Break their will. Yeah, exactly. That's where it came from. And I'm guessing that a lot, and I've received a number of emails from people who live in the South and several from South Carolinians saying, you know, those of us who grew up in the South, and I'm not one. I grew up in Michigan, and frankly, I was not familiar with the phrase. But, you know, those of us, these people have been saying to me, those of us who grew up in the South, and particularly African-Americans who grew up in the South, know exactly what Jim DeMint was talking about when he's talking about breaking the first African-American president of the United States.
Exactly. By no stretch of the imagination could he be unfamiliar with that term, being where he's from. I'm from Georgia originally, and I never came across that term until I read the Willie Lynch letters in college quite some time ago. But when I heard it, it was really like I was in one of those Twilight Zone episodes where I heard something totally different. I'm like, didn't you hear that? And everyone else is talking about the reference.
Waterloo. Which all the white folks who had to study European history, you know, they're all going, oh, Waterloo, let's talk about Waterloo. And they're not getting that Jim DeMint's talking about breaking an African-American president.
Breaking a man, not to mention the first African-American president, but breaking a black man, and this from a man in South Carolina.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. And when you said that, this is why you're one of the best, I have to say, which I've said before, but now it's unequivocal now. So,
thank you, Mike.
I really appreciate you bringing up that point. And lastly, I'd like to say, yes, read the Willie Lynch letters. Anybody who gets time, it's only 20 pages, but it's an emotional ride.
I'll check
really
it out.
It's really hard to get through.
I'll check it out. Mike, thank you very much for the call. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, are Republicans calling for a return to slave breaking? I mean, Newt Gingrich just said civil rights was a mistake.
I will buy you a garden.
Helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, our Twilight Zone alert for the day. Newt Gingrich said, this is a quote, Obama and the Democrats will regret their decision to push for comprehensive reform. He called the bill, quote, the most radical social experiment in modern times, end quote. He added, quote, they have destroyed their party, much as Lyndon Johnson shattered the Democratic Party for 40 years. With the enactment of civil rights legislation in the 1960s. This is totally bizarre. Newt Gingrich appears to be saying that politics is more important than doing the right thing. You know, there's an old saying that a politician is a person who looks to the next election. A statesman or a woman is the person who looks to the next generation. Newt Gingrich, politician. It's just no other way to put it. Shirley in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hey, Shirley, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I enjoy your program, and I just had to call. I watch you often, and this is the first time I've ever called in. I didn't think I would get through, but I did.
Well, thank you.
So this is great, and because of your program, I took the next step and became a member of Free Speech as far as, you know, sending money in addition to because, I, you know, well, anyway.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Shirley, for your support. What's the or your support of Free Speech TV? It's not me, but but you called about.
Yes. The whole last summer when Senator DeMint talked about Waterloo and breaking him, I got both points. And at first I thought maybe, you know, well, I shouldn't have thought that. He's from South Carolina. He knows what he's saying. But the whole breaking really resonated with my grandfather, who is 83 years old. I'm African American. And my grandfather took it as, I thought of just breaking, just trying to stop somebody.
Right.
But my grandfather,
he knew what it meant.
Yes, he knew exactly what it meant because his father, my great-grandfather, who I never met, was lynched.
Oh,
and he's from South Carolina. My grandmother, it was a horrific story. They had to flee South Carolina because of that. My great-grandfather was someone who white supremacists had to target to break because he wasn't someone who was going to just take his second-class status, and that was very threatening to, you know, that whole society. Right. And so my grandfather, and I, this is something I never knew. I always knew that my great-grandfather was lynched, but I didn't know my grandfather had actually witnessed it. He was 6 years old.
Oh, my.
And that's just stuff, you know, my grandfather never really talked about.
Right.
And then I was like 6 years old and you're seeing something like that.
But your grandfather's still alive. He's in his 80s.
Yes.
And he told you that he understood what Jim DeMint was saying.
Yes.
And he said he was going to break Obama.
Yes, because I'm thinking like, okay, this is, you know, politics and they're playing this game. Right. And I know the real serious ramifications of, you know, not health care getting
sure.
through is not the best bill. But I understood that. But my grandfather took it to a whole nother level. And quite frankly, I was embarrassed that I didn't know that. I mean, you know, I consider myself an educated woman. I completely got the Waterloo because, hey, you know, that's what I was taught in school.
Right.
And breaking, I'm thinking, oh, okay, they're just trying to stop me. No, but this, it's serious. And I just don't think a senator, depending on whatever political party you're, you should be very careful in type of words that you're using.
Yes, and if Senator DeMint did not intend to make reference to slave breaking,
yes.
did not intend to be dog whistling the racists in South Carolina, he should have come out the next day and said, you know, the word breaking was inappropriate. I apologize for having used it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, because, you know, people like my grandfather, that they know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say probably most of the people, or many of the people in South Carolina, certainly
yeah.
most of the African Americans in South Carolina knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Shirley, thank you so much for the call
thank
and for
you
sharing
so
your story with us. I appreciate it. Dan in South Fork, Colorado. Hey, Dan, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I love your program.
Thanks.
And I had a comment about that, and I was wondering, does anybody know where the white supremacy actually originated from? Who was the first white person to think, hey, I'm white, I'm above the rest of you guys? And also, if those guys do actually squeak into heaven, they're going to be really surprised when they find Jesus and he's not white.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, where white supremacy, I think that the whole concept of you know, my group is better than your group, at a certain level, has always been with us and is with all primate species. And it's a survival instinct. It's, you know, we have as animals, we have built into us a need or a desire to protect our family first, and as the circle, you know, as genetically moves farther and farther away from us, the instinct to protect diminishes. And the instinct to defend against, as people get genetically farther away from us, increases to defend against. And
uh-huh.
I think that's biological. And the marvelous thing about humanity and the wonderful story of the human race and the extraordinary story of the United States of America, that the whole world looks at us. And the reason why, when I did my radio show the day after President Obama was elected, the morning after the election, I turned to we were going on the air, and I turned to Louise and Sean, and right now we're on the air in England and in Africa through our affiliation with Pacifica, but at that time we were only on the air in the United States on Air America Radio, and
right.
I turned to Louise and Sean and I said, for the first hour, I only want to take calls from people outside the United States. And they were like, you know, we don't have any affiliates outside the United States. I said, people, you know, we know from the stats, people are listening to us all over the world on the internet. I just want to take calls from, and they said, you know, what if nobody calls? And I said, let's try it. So we opened I opened the microphone the day after the election, and I said, I would, for the first hour, like to only take calls from people outside the United States. So if you're in the United States, please don't call into the program. And here's the phone number, both the 800 number and the straight number that you can dial in if you're in a country where you can't dial an 800 number into the United States. And the lines lit up, and for a solid hour, I had a woman in rural Mexico sobbing in a Hispanic accent.
Yeah.
America has once again become the light of the world. I got a call from a man in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where they're having a war right right now.
Yeah.
You know, an African from Africa. I have at least a half a dozen calls from Kenyans. We had calls from Scandinavians. We had calls from South Africa. We had calls from Australians. We had calls, but in particular, the people calling, and all over South America, in particular, the people calling from third world countries saying, America has recovered its soul. We are so happy for you. I was astounded. I mean, our lines were totally slammed. And I think that that is the extraordinary power of America, is that as a concept 230 some odd years ago, and now increasingly as a reality, we have been able to transcend that biological, and Dan, thank you for the comments and the calls on this. We've been able to transcend that biological, this is my group, that's their group, you know, we're different, blah, blah, blah. We've been able to transcend that to a large extent, or at least try to. Now, at the same time, you've got, like, the National Review came out. There's this guy writing for the National Review earlier this week saying, there's no more racism in America. Now, that's something that could only be said by a white guy who has grown up in a white society and has never been outside of that bubble. And even at that, I would say it's disingenuous. But anyway, that's where we go. Cynthia in Redding, California. Hey, Cynthia, what's up?
Yes, good morning, Tom. I would like to hear more about the Calvinistic movement coming out of Texas that you mentioned a couple of weeks ago. I'd like to know more about that, because
okay.
I think that's the basis here of what we're dealing with this whole, you know, hijacking of Christianity.
Well, yeah, John Calvin, thank you, Cynthia. John Calvin's notion was that the, and this was back 400 years ago, that the proof of a blessing by God was to be rich. That if somebody was rich, that proved that God had blessed them. And if somebody was poor, it proved that they were cursed. It's kind of a variation on the old Mormon doctrine up until the last couple of decades, that darkness of skin was the mark of Cain. And I think that this is all interrelated. Wendy in Whidbey Island, Washington. Hey, Wendy, what's up?
Hey, I would like to acknowledge Shirley for calling in and sharing her and her grandfather's story. That was incredibly powerful and just right to the point. And thank you, Shirley. I spoke to Jim DeMint's office a matter of, you know, several minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Rebecca, who answered the phone, let us know unequivocally, she unequivocally confirmed that was a racist remark, and that the senator is not apologizing for it. And this just saddens me so much, because
she said this by her tone of voice to you or in her words?
She said it. She did not literally say that it was a racist remark,
right,
but the way she handled the call,
right,
her attitude, her words, and what she said to me unequivocally confirmed to me that it was a racist remark, mm-hmm, and there was no apology whatsoever.
Right.
And this saddens me deeply, and I do not believe that this country has recovered its morality, and that we spiritually and morally are lacking.
Yeah.
Some foreigner said to me about 10 years ago that we are so mean-spirited in our press around our campaign.
Wendy, I'm sorry I have to wrap it up, because the machine is not going to let us continue, but thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up soon, a full Monty alert. What's wrong with wearing pink gloves and a white thong? Well, I'll explain soon. Plus, your calls. What's up with